Works. Hello again. Hopefully you managed to follow last week's lecture. That was only a recorded lecture from last year, but things haven't changed too much, so thought that could be a fair way to do it. In that lecture, the second assignment, the second hand-in, was also analyzed, maybe with a bit of, ambition to it. It seems like you have to produce a lot there, which is probably impossible to do on two pages anyway. But two pages is what you have, so make the best out of it. The important thing is that you at least debate the topics that's there a little bit, and that you refer to things in a correct way. That's what we will judge this by. The the previous hand-in is on its way to be corrected, given feedback on. Usually when I make these hand-ins, I make them so that you can give several or do several tries. I have managed to mark out a wrong box in Blackboard there, so you weren't able to deliver more than once this time. But there is still, if you haven't gotten feedback, it's still time to change things now. And then it's probably an idea that we talk a little bit about these papers, what we expected you to find there. The Kansas paper that you were going to analyze, was that easy? Did you find the variables there? And they were quite obvious, right? Still, some have difficulties. Out of experience, some 30% miss this. Because the I think it has something to do with the word dependent. What's it depending on? It seems like an independent measure you have there, but it's depending on something. Well, it's pretty straightforward, actually, and many try to do this more complicated than it is. Because you have an independent variable there, which is, of course, it's dependent on a lot of things, but it's independent because this is what you measure. You measure either a pancake or you measure the state of Kansas. So those are the two instances of the independent variable that you introduce. Even though it's not, even though it's there from beforehand, you just observe something that exists. It's nothing you vary in the experiment, but still it's what you are investigating. You're asking a question. Is flatness dependent on whether you measure a pancake or you measure Kansas? Okay? So that's the independent variable. And then the dependent variable in that paper is flatness as it is defined by the researchers. So it's the result you get from your from the formula for measuring flatness that they have decided to use. That's the dependent variable. You may come up with more creative versions that also may be correct here. So, but this is the most straightforward way to answer this one. So in case you have missed out a little bit on this one, feel free to correct it and deliver a new version where you correct it. Of course, when it comes to operationalization, what do we need to specify more in detail here? Well, the independent variables are pretty straightforward, and at least one of them, one version of it. But you may need to say that what do we mean by a pancake? And they've said that in the paper, of course. They said that we, in our experiment, we define pancake as the specific pancake we buy at, I don't know what type of shop it was, some chain. The Pancake House, was it? Something like that. Huh? Okay. You may have written that needed to be operationalized, and maybe that's also a threat to both validity and reliability in this study. But of course, the other term that is specified and that needs to be specified here is what we mean by flatness. Because the question states flatness, and they define flatness as the outcome of the formula that they have introduced here. So those are the correct answers to the Kansas paper. Any ideas about reliability here? Are there any threats to reliability in this study? Is it reliable? Yeah? It's reliable, right? They would probably get the same result even if they buy another pancake. I think it's something with the nature of that formula that's the problem. When you try to measure something on a micro scale compared to something on a very large scale, which probably will give you the same answers anyway. So it's sort of reliable, yes? But of course, what is a challenge here is validity. Is it at all valid to measure? Well, you're comparing two very different things here, yeah? Yeah. For the recording, you could also have measured Kansas in many ways here. And that probably affects reliability in this case. So that's an important issue there. Yes, it is. It's probably not very, at least it's not valid. Kansas isn't flatter than a pancake, at least in our in our concept of it. But you could get that result in this study. What about then the other paper? Just take a look at that as well. We have one major independent variable. Although it's not the only probably independent variable we are touching on here, which tells us that it's probably not very well written, it's not very cleanly written in this way. Its main independent variable is pretty straightforward, right? It's whether you are a user or if you're not the user of a computer during a lecture. That's the two. That's the two obvious instances of an independent variable here. And then we are measuring whether that has any consequence for the type of responses that's given to the questionnaire. So we make a few scales, we make a few indexes, we make scores out of these questions, and we see whether those are depending on whether you are a computer user or a non-user. So that's the straightforward thing. And then we also measure whether you are using it for, whether you are observing academic use or non-academic use. We ask people for reasons for not using computers, whether that is different from computer users to non-users. But of course we are maybe touching on some other issues there as well. Did anyone have any comments on that? Did you identify any other independent variables? Someone is nodding a little bit here. Which one was that then? Yeah, visual noise as a dependent mobile device as independent. Yes, maybe. Mm-hmm. But there are it's not necessarily a very easy answer, but this is the most easy or straightforward way to answer it. At least that's my view of this one. Do we need to, should we have been more specific when we defined the terms here? Yes? Internet connected devices is vaguely defined, right? Even though we didn't observe that at all, yeah. And even though it was kind of, it was a few years ago when we did this, and it wasn't that common to browse as much as we do today. So it had a reason, but if we were measuring this today, of course it would be very different. But it's also vaguely defined, yes, I agree, yeah. Does it matter if it's online? It could have been a game anyway. Yeah. So maybe the actual presence of visual noise should be the the independent. So maybe it could have been done in another way. How do we define noise here or noisy visual things? We try to be very broad on that and say that anything that was observed as irrelevant for the lecture was visual noise. Maybe it isn't so. So maybe it gives the direction for further research on this. I don't know. Reliability and validity then? Any comments? No, you don't have to. It's yeah. Yeah, maybe. I think what you're addressing is that we are actually measuring bias. We are measuring biased or different biases in two populations. so that's maybe the actual dependent variable here. Yeah. But I think we try to say that if we aren't specific, we say that it's we don't know nothing about the realities here. So some objective measurement of what actually is being used. Yes, maybe. Mm. Yeah, good comments. But okay, as you see, there are not necessarily a straightforward. You can discuss this in many ways, and you can get to different results. But the ideas I've given you now are what you could call an easy, correct answer. So if you have mixed what's dependent and independent, for instance, if you switch those around completely, I think it's a good idea to rewrite it if you are on the track and if you've just been a bit more creative and made this a bit more complicated than I did in the beginning here, that will be accepted. You will just get a comment on it. Anyway, you won't fail on this hand-in, so you will be given a new chance if we think it was not acceptable. Okay. For today's lecture, we're going to continue with this a little bit of statistics. I'm not sure if we're going to use the full 2 hours here now. We'll talk a little bit about statistical methods, procedures. And I will also try to do an actual analysis of data directly on a real data set. So that we may see different ways of analyzing data, different methods in use, how I would read the output. One of the questions that you will get on your exam is a question where you are going to read output from a statistical analysis. You're not going to do any statistics, but you're going to read the output that I give you from the statistical tool that I am using. And that's the same tool as we use now for demonstrations. While I remember it, you can now sign up for groups in. I finally managed to make this group so that you can sign on to them in Blackboard. It's groups where you sign up yourself. So. Find some friends that you want to group up with. And what I would like to do next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week, is that I would like to talk to you group-wise. If you can come up with ideas about the topic, that's fine. Bring some ideas, at least some vague ideas to me. And then we can refine it a little bit. So I need to have a talk with the groups before we actually start up. So you can either come to me or I can invite you. That's when you are signing up for groups, the groups I haven't talked to, that doesn't come to me. I'll write up some hours where you can find me. But try to sign up for groups. Question? No, it's if that's the case, it's something I've done. So then I will try to remove. There should be one with 12 groups in it, which you can sign on to, which is the correct one. I tried different versions. There was some. It was a little bit complicated in Blackboard to do this, but I managed to do it finally. So hopefully you can find it and sign up to it. But there will be one for all off-campus students as well. So probably within the day or within a couple of days, you will get a similar one for the off-campus project, where I will also write some information about the off-campus project. But if you can manage to join groups who do things on campus, that's best. It's also the easiest solution maybe for you. Okay, to remind you a little bit about where we stopped last time. This is about testing hypothesis. It's about describing data, and it's about figuring out whether you should keep or throw away your null hypothesis in an experiment. So, in case you keep it, if you should throw it away, there need to be an overwhelming chance that the null hypothesis actually is wrong. So we have a very conservative approach, remember that one, all the time, that we always wants to keep the null hypothesis unless we are at a given level, that being 5%, that being 1%, that being 0.1%. That's up, more or less up to you, depending on how serious it is to do what's called a type 1 error, that you falsely reject the null hypothesis. Because the way to control for that, the way to make it less possible to make a type 1 error, is to increase the significance level in your study. So by increasing it from 5% to 1%, it's much more likely that or less likely that you will make a type 1 error, the active scientific error. So how do you decide whether that is important or what levels you should choose? I think the main criteria here has to do with what's the consequences of being wrong. If you say that if it has some consequence for individuals, for society, for the way we discuss things, for changing practices that's established, if you want to do something like that, there should be an overwhelming chance that you actually are right before you reject your null hypothesis. So the higher the consequences of your conclusions are, well, the stronger criteria, the stronger cutoff point you probably would like to use for when you are rejecting your null hypothesis. And of course, always always assume that doing a type 1 error is the most serious thing you can do here. It's usually much more serious than doing a type 2 error, which is then to falsely keep the null hypothesis, which we tend to say has few consequences, because that's the conservative thing. Then things stay as they are. I'm just wondering if instead of talking about this in theory, that we should right away try to use this the data set that I have here. I'll just go to the end here a little bit. I have a data set that actually was done, I think it was done at the University in Bergen, where they were investigating the consequences of night work and how they, or some different psychosocial factors. So, will your daytime sleepiness be affected by night work? Will your level of depression and anxiety depend on whether you are a night worker? Your alcohol consumption, does that vary with night work? So this is an actual data set, and it consists of 44 different variables, and some of them are then typical independent variables. Some are dependent variables. One of the independents here are, of course, the number of night shifts you've had over the last year. That's the main. That's what they were investigating in this study. They wanted to see the consequences of that. So different values when it came to the number of night shifts is here the main independent variable. But there are a few other, you could say, third variables or possible confounding variables that's included to see whether both for descriptive reasons, I guess, just to describe the population and to describe other possible factors that describes night workers, but also to control for confounding effects of third variables. Like, is it worse to be a night worker when you are a woman than a man, for instance? Just which may be a nuance that they were after here. I'm not going to do that kind of analysis now, but in the end we will maybe we can read something of that out of the data set we have. We'll see. It consists of. A number of subscales, which is scored here in the data set as separate variables that you will have to calculate yourself. For instance, they have something called the Epworth Sleepiness Scale, which have seven, what's LED? What's that in English? Parts, maybe. Seven questions that weighs into this score. And you have something called the Bergen Insomnia Scale, where you just add things together. You have a number of questions that goes into that score, which you will have to create yourself based on this data set. Alcohol use disorder identification tests, where you ask people about alcohol consumption. As you can see, there are 44 questions in all, which is, well, you've seen questionnaires like this, and it's very typical that sections of this of the questionnaire goes into subscales, which is the main dependent variables that will be used. So very few single questions here are to be considered as dependent variables. It's the scores that you make out of these single questions that when you add together five and five questions and stuff like that. But we'll try to see the data set now. If I manage to do this. My eyes are struggling a little bit with this now, but when I take this into the software package, which is called SPSS, Statistical Package for the Social Sciences, was what this acronym meant in the beginning, at least. It is now in version 25 or something, I think, so it's been around for many, many years. You will actually have access to this through the NTNU servers. I'm not sure if you can download the application or if you need to run it on a server somewhere. But at least you should have access to it. This is not a course in SPSS, but many of you will probably be using at least something similar to this at some point. There are free versions or shareware versions that do much of the same stuff. I think it's one called PSPP. So you can wonder why they created that acronym. But that's also a version that or some software that does a lot of the same as we do here. At least on a basic level. But typically in a statistical package like this, you will see a data sheet that looks a lot like this one. We have a number of variables, the 44 variables that I mentioned, they are columns in this spreadsheet, and each questionnaire that's filled in and delivered comes as one line in this questionnaire or in this spreadsheet. But there are two ways of reading things. You can also read them as variables. So all these 44 things here are 44 questions, also can be written as variables with different labels to them. For instance, we know that for this question, you have a score of 0 means not at all, 1 means now and then, 2 means much of the time, or a lot of the time, 3 means most of the time. So these are just ways of making this readable in the end. So you put labels and you put value labels and you put variable labels on the different variables. I've cheated a little bit now, so that I've already done the calculations that's asked for here. I've already made these subscales. So I've made a subscale for anxiety, and I made one for depression. I made the audit, which I think is the alcoholic use index. I made the Epworth sleepiness scale, the Bergen sleepiness scale, and I don't remember what that one was. You could see it on the... I won't go back to the slides to find that out. Doesn't matter. It's something. It's a scale, subscale, made out of parts of these questions. Maybe some depression scale, I think. So this is how the data are, and of course you can't read trends or anything from a sheet like this. It's way over the human capacity to try to figure out how this is. There are several hundred respondents in different ages. What they have done here is that they have asked people about their age. And that's a good idea if you're sending in a questionnaire. Instead of pre-arranging, it's very common to group ages into age groups. But it's kind of usually not a good idea to do it initially, because you may end up with all your respondents in one group. So. Maybe you should have divided it in another way. So don't ask them about age spans. Ask them about their age. And if you're even more clever, don't ask them about their age, but ask them about their birth year, which is much easier for us to answer. Whether it's conscious or not, we tend to cheat a little bit, at least when you come to my age, when you're asked about your age. Maybe because we don't remember the birthdays or something, but... Or maybe you just want to come out in a better light, I don't know. But there are actually done research on this. So ask them about the birth year. That's the one that gets most correct responses. Okay. What we usually start to do when we are looking at a sheet like this is to do some initial descriptive statistics, just to get a feeling with how these data that we are looking at are organized. A lot of these statistics that we will apply later, I've written about them in the slides that you have, some of the assumptions that we do when we do statistics. For instance, a very basic assumption for a lot of statistics is that the data we are dealing with are normally distributed, that they actually are distributed in the ideal bell-shaped curve that we described in our previous lecture, as any naturally varying phenomena probably would end up. But does our sample, the data that we have, are they actually normally distributed? That's one of the things we want to look at. And of course, we also want to clean the data, see if there are any outliers, are there any obvious faults in our data set. And we can try to do a few of these things now. I probably want to do some descriptive statistics first. I'll just look at some frequencies. And maybe we can enter... age and the number of nights you worked, for instance. Gender distributions could be a good idea here. And of course, all the dependent variables that's in the data set. So if we do it like this, probably we'll now first look at some of the independent variables, and then look at the dependent variables and how they are distributed. And maybe we want to have some charts here. I'll just add a histogram and putting a normal distribution on top of that. It's not a good idea on a variable like gender, but it's there now. I do the same for all these variables. So what do they look like? I will also choose some statistics here. I will look at the mean and the median. The reason I take both of these, as we mentioned probably last time, was that I want to see if these are different, very different. If they are different, it may indicate some kind of a very skewed distribution, at least, or it may say something about some bad quality data, that we punched data in the wrong way or scored it in the wrong way in some way. If the mean is 2 and the range should be from 1 to 10 and you have 100 in there, it's probably because someone had punched an error, a zero too much. So that's something you probably will discover when you are looking at it this way. I'm also taking out the standard deviation to see how the distribution is organized, what are the ranges that we are dealing with here. It's not complicated things with variance. And I look at also two measures of the distribution, because these are two measures, skewness and kurtosis, which says something about the skewness is, of course, whether you have a distribution that's very skewed to one of the ends, one of the sides of the normal distribution, that you have a very long tail in one way and nothing in the other direction. While kurtosis says something about how steep the curve are. Is it a flat distribution or is it a very steep distribution? And we have some acceptable ranges there. We, as a rule of the thumb, we say that these scores should be in the range of plus minus 2, to say that we are assuming that we have a pretty good normal distribution. You won't remember these numbers, so don't worry. But I'm just showing you the typical types of data that we are doing or taking out when we do this kind of analysis of a data set. So when we do this, I get some tables out of it. And the first one is just are, of course, the numbers here. As you can see, there are 809 respondents to this questionnaire, so it's a pretty huge sample. This is a good-sized sample. And I would be kind of surprised if a sample of this size doesn't show a normal distribution. It usually does. It would be a very strange variable to measure if it doesn't come out within the acceptable ranges for these variables. And as you can see, the mean score for nights worked is 22 nights. The median is a bit lower, meaning that there's probably a few here that has a huge number of nights in, because this is drawn upwards a little bit. Although the mode score here is actually 0, so the most common score among these in this population is the value 0. So, but again, it tells us that we have a control group, at least. We have a large group here who doesn't work night shifts, which is probably important. we get a number here for the standard deviation, which tells us that in the range of the mean score and plus minus 25, we will find 58% of our population. That's an estimate here. Meaning, but of course, this is a strange way to talk about it, because you can't have less than zero nights. So, but anyway, it's an estimate you have, and it's probably correct the other way upwards. So you have a pretty large standard deviation. But it can probably work with it anyway. It's as it is an independent variable in this case, and not a dependent variable. But we will probably redo. It may be an idea as to do some kind of a reconfiguration of this variable, because it's not necessarily the range you're after. It's whether you are working nights at all, or whether you are not working night shifts. Maybe this is okay. The data set here is maybe on the side. You won't be working with anything like this, but. You will probably, or a lot of you will work with data sets that looks similar to this one. But before we take the break, let's just take a quick look at the other variables here. A quick glance here tells us that this is the gender variable here is impossible to read, of course, because it's got two values in it. It's probably 0 and 1, and it's very skewed towards one gender. Probably we'll see it in the end here. But for the rest of them, if we take a look at these, can we assume at least for these that would be important for these dependent variables we have in the end here? Can we assume that they are normally distributed? Yes, we probably can. There is a bit of skewness in one of the variables, this depression scale. But still, it's scutosis. They're all well within acceptable ranges, so I wouldn't worry with these ones. So these distributions are good. And then we, of course, get the frequency tables, which may be important for some of these variables. Maybe mostly for these. As you can see, we have almost... So if we want to say something about gender here, we would probably have difficulties with that, because we have a huge overrepresentation of females in this population, which probably we would know this if we were asking the questions, but it's probably workers in the health sector. So it reflects the actual population that you want to say something about. So it's health workers we're talking about here. What about the other ones? Age span is large. And the number of nights worked is also varying a lot. I wonder how it is to work 150, 160 nights a year, but some have in this data set. probably have a very strange life if you do that. But if we can also then look at this as histograms, as we made here. And they look a bit skewed, of course, because we have this, there are some limit for the scores here. It can't be less than zero, it can't be more than something at some of the variables. But as you can see, these phenomena that we have here, these are not cured data in any way, it's real data. And they come out as pretty nicely distributed as normal distributions. So we can do nice statistics on these things. Okay. Time for a break. Let's meet 10 past. No, quarter past. 10-minute break. Okay. Just try as good as you can. There was a problem with sharing this application in Blackboard here. So I'm trying to share the whole screen instead. So what we did now was that we did a little bit of descriptive statistics and found out that most of these, or all the variables that we are going to do analysis on seems to be reasonably well distributed. Now, what type of statistics should I use on this? So, well, as some of these, or most of these, seems to have a pretty nice distribution, it's probably okay for us to apply what we call parametric statistics compared to non-parametric statistics. In parametric statistics, we assume that we are dealing with things that are normally distributed. Well, typically in non-parametric statistics, we don't make that assumption. Well, there are some data here that we can do some non-parametric statistics on as well, that where you don't assume any normal distribution, for instance, like gender and something. So if we're going to compare whether you are whether gender and whether there is a systematic effect of gender on the number of night shifts you go or something like that, if you reconfigure the number of night shifts into a dichotomous variable, a variable with only two values, whether you are a night shift worker or you're not a night shift worker. So we'll do that. I've done that already on the data set. So I have also a variable in the end here, which we didn't show the what it looked like. We can do that quickly. So instead of these, take them out, and then I look at the final one, because I've done a recalculation of the number of nights worked into this one. In this case, it gives little meaning to have a histogram, so I'll do something like this. So this is a variable that we're going to work with as well then. So you're either working night shifts or you're not. And 571 of these respondents are working night shifts at least once, while 238 are not working night shifts at all. And we can put this into a 2x2 table and see whether, for instance, this distribution is on random. If we have a 2x2 table, we can see whether it's just as likely for women as for men to work night shifts. That's a way to treat normally distributed data. It could be a more complicated table, but in this case it's a 2x2 table. What I then calculate is the deviation from, because there's a normal distribution here. So I calculate whether whether there is, if you had a random, if there was random in which group you came, well, then you would get a score of zero here. But it's we calculate something called a chi square. You can look that up. It's a very common way to analyze data. Non-parametric. It's a non-parametric method. It's a way to calculate deviation from random spread in a table. could be a 2x2 table, it could be a more complicated table. If I remember where I can find that, can do it here. Let's say that what we want to see is whether gender and number of night shifts is related here. I put them in rows and columns. I do an additional thing here. I get a window here where I say that I want to look at the chi square here. It's actually the only one I take out. And I also want to see some more details in each cell here. What was the expected value in each cell if it was systematic? So I'll do this. And we can just add some other things here, which gives me this result. I can actually do this. No, delete. This is the actual table I get. So here is then whether you have are working night shifts or not working night shifts, and women and men. This is the actual count that goes into this cell. This is the expected count if it was evenly distributed among men and women. So I can see a somewhat deviation here. There are a bit more women than expected who doesn't work night shifts. While for men, it's the other way around. It's a bit fewer than expected in this cell. So there seems to be some kind of a systematic skewness here. And when we calculate this, we actually get this value. And if you read that, remember how to read that one. It should be below a certain threshold before we reject the null hypothesis. In this case, it is 0.013. So if we now use the 5% criteria, the significance level of 5%, then we would, in this case, reject the null hypothesis because we're below that limit and say that, yes, there is a difference for men and women whether they work night shifts or not. If we, on the other hand, say that we want to be more conservative here, which there is no reason for that in this case, which is just, a descriptive thing, there is this is higher than the 1% threshold. It's slightly higher, but it's higher. So if you use the 1% threshold, this would not be statistically significant, the deviation from random that we get in the table. And we would say that we have we would keep the null hypothesis. Right? So this is an example of a case where the actual significance level that we choose to use in the experiment matters. Well, nowadays, there are other ways to report it. In some papers, in some connections, they just want you to report the significance level you get. Instead of saying something about the thresholds, well, you can say it in text that this is good enough, but they want you to actually report the numbers and not say anything about whether this is statistically significant or not. It's up to the reader to decide whether this is strong or not. So there are different traditions here. But in the classical sense, we would here have a situation where we, based on the significance level we choose, will come to different conclusions. So, but it seems like there are relatively more men than women who work night shifts. But of course, there are a lot more women than men that have answered these questionnaires and are actually working in the health sector. So you can read this in many ways. Okay, that was an example of non-parametric statistics. Another group of statistics is where we have the possibility of grouping things. For instance, are you a night worker or are you not the night worker? That's two different groups now. And that is a way of representing our independent variable, because that was what we were wondering about. Does that affect your level of anxiety and your level of depression and your level of sleepiness and your alcohol consumption? These things. A very common statistical test that we apply for these special cases, or it's not a special case, it's a very common thing to do, when we are comparing two groups, is to use what's called the student's t-test. You may have seen that in many connections. So the t-test, or student's t-test, after the guy who made the algorithm or the formula in the beginning, is a very common thing to do. So let's now test the, let's say that the researchers here they have a hypothesis that says, I think it's reason to believe that that the more night shifts you work, or whether you are, if you work night shifts, you are likely to be more sleepy during daytime. Okay? So, we'll check that out. So what I do now is that I go to the compare means here and choose an independent samples t-test, where I say that the variable I want to look at is the one called nattevakter, night shifts, which has the values, let me see if I remember this one now, I think it's 0 and 1. Those are the numbers I have put on them. 0 means, of course, no night shifts. And then I want to check whether that affects these two sleepiness scales. One called ESS and one called Bergen Insomnia Scale. So does it affect these two? Is what I'm after. When I do that, I get a table like this. I can see the scores in the two groups. For this ESS, we have a mean score of 8.5 for the high means more sleepy, I think. For those who don't work night shifts, we have a slightly higher score for those who actually work night shifts. And the same goes for this other sleepiness scale. So these are the values, and when we calculate statistics, you can see that one of them gives us a significance value of 0.017. And if you remember, how should we interpret that? Is it significant in this case? Let's say if we apply a 5% level. Yes, it is. If we apply a 5% level, This is below the threshold we are setting, which would be 0 or 0.05. And this is below 0.05. But it's again above 0.1. So it's not a very strong effect. It is an effect. It is mainly an effect in this case, and this is also part of this the judgments you have to apply here. It's mainly an effect that is there due to the huge number of respondents that we have here. So almost any phenomena will, or almost any small difference between groups will become statistically significant if you have enough respondents. So the important thing here is that that's part of the considerations you have to apply here. Yes. So, but the other scale was not depending on whether you are a night shift worker in this case. You also get the standard deviation, which of course would also say something about the chance of getting a significant result here. But what is important here is that the standard deviation is similar in both groups in this case, so it's a good thing. Now, does it? We can try to put in a few other variables here as well. Let's say we had another. Maybe some of them are clearer than this one. So instead of taking these two, I enter these depression scales. Where are they? Oh, in the end here. So they take the rest of them. We include the one with alcohol consumption. And do the same t-test on this with the same groups, whether you are a night shift worker or not. A few of them are. So you could see this depression scale is statistically significant now, also on a 1% level. We are below this, slightly below, but below the 1% level here on this DS scale. I think it's called depression scale. The other two, the more detailed scales, does not come out as statistically significant. But one who does is alcohol consumption, and that's very clear in this case. So night, as we can see from the levels here, people who work night shifts are drinking more than those who are not. So I don't know what that, why that is. There is probably some third factors involved here as well. Your life situation, whether you have children, which also influences how you, whether you work at nights or not. So, any ideas of more things to analyze here? Yeah? Yeah, we can probably do some. We can do some recalculations based on this, on the variable called nights worked last year. You can regroup that one instead of saying yes and no. We could do something else, which would give us a bit more nuances. Which probably a good variable to work with here. Maybe we can make it into a four group thing. Or maybe we can take the, so nothing a little bit up to between 1 and say 15. A lot is above 15. Or now we can make it into three groups. So if we go up to 60% here, then we include 20 nights. So between 0 and 20 nights is medium, and above 20 nights is okay. I can make that one. I'll recode that into a new variable. So the input variable here is nights last year. Takes a little time, but you can live with that. I'll make a new variable called night 2 or something. Then I can do the calculations. I've gotten feedback from those who are online here that it's, they don't see this very well either, so I'm not sure how to do this. But the other stream is going to work, so that's a message for those who are trying to follow this from the outside. The stream that's on forelesing.hig.no should be right here now. The value 0 then still becomes 0, right? We just keep that one. You agree to that? And then we have a range that is from 1 to, did we say 20? 1 through 20 gets the value 1, which is what we call sum. And then we have another range here, which is 21 and more. That gets the value 2. So then we can now we're making a new variable called night 2, like this. We could just take a quick look at it first. It would probably see what it looks like. So it's reasonably good, don't you agree? We have three groups now. We can even do this in a very correct way and put some names on them, just that you see how that is done as well. If someone would like to play around with SPSS, so the value 0 now means one means and the value 2 gets that. So if we do some calculations here now, we can see that what was I going to do? I was going to I was just think I can use this one, where I want to see whether, well, the independent variable I have now is this one called independent, or called night 2 with its three values, and the dependent one is, since we had a very nice one there before, this was the one on alcohol consumption. We can use that one, and we can also use this sleepiness thing and see whether that depends on this one. So dependent and independence, and what I can also do here is that I can ask it to do some statistical calculations, because what I have now is a situation where this is a good example of the other type of or another consideration you make, the t-test. That's the comparison of two different groups and the means of means and distribution of two different groups. And that's a special case of what's called ANOVAS. ANOVAS is analysis of variance. So when you are doing having more than two groups, you have to apply ANOVA analysis here, which is pretty much the same, but it's not as clear to read out as the t-test is. But still, I test for that one, and I also test for linearity here to see whether it is it's actually a regression analysis that I do. I check whether there is a strong relationship between these two in a linear way. Because an ANOVA, even if you had a skewed distribution where the value 2 created more problems than the values, where the value 1, for instance, creates more difficulties than the value 0 and 1, and 2 in this case, well, you would get a significant result from an analysis of variance, but it wouldn't be linear. So it would give us some indication of how these data look like. And when I do that, I get an output that looks like this one. First, I see the actual numbers. No nights on this audit scores 4.2. Some nights score 4.7, and many nights score 5.0. So we have a pretty linear thing here, which we probably will see when we read out the statistics. On the other thing, we have a similar thing, actually. And in this case, when we read the between group statistics here, we get a highly significant score of this. What we do is that we calculate either an F score. In this, when you have an ANOVA, you calculate an F score, which in the old days you had to look up in a table to find the significance levels, which is now calculated for us, of course. So what we see now is, in this case, a highly significant result, and also a very linear result. So it's both linear and significant when you read out the F-score in an ANOVA. So the more, even when we did a more nuanced way or defined this in a more nuanced way, we found that there is a relationship between alcohol consumption and also sleepiness in this case, but a bit not that strong. So this is just to give you an idea of how this can be done. You can, there are a lot of other considerations that I mentioned in the foils that follows this. For instance, we are now dealing with situations where we have independent groups. Those who are part of the group of you could say night workers are not part of the group non-night workers. They're exclusive. And then we are talking about independent groups and apply a certain type of statistics for that. We may have other situations, and that's actually quite common to have in many fields, where you have, you could say, dependent groups, where you have types of repeated measurements. You are where all people are measured on all instances of or all instances of the independent variable, for instance. You get all kinds of treatments. And then you have other types of statistics, for instance, what's called repeated measurements ANOVA, where you, which gives you, it's a very strong statistical method to apply. Well, unless you have some very are curious about anything else in this data set, this was just to give you some kind of a first taste on what do we do in statistical analysis of quantitative data. So we tend to start with this descriptive analysis where we get a taste of the actual data, how they are distributed, skewnesses, ketosis. We are looking at what variables we have where we actually can assume a normal distribution. So that's the starting point, and then we can apply different methods depending on the qualities of these data as hypothesis testing. And as you can see, the typical the numbers that you tend to read out of these tables are the, for instance, if you do a student's t-test in addition to, let's see if you can find one here. In addition to reporting this significance level, you usually also report the t value, the actual t value, because that's an even stronger. If you know how to read the statistics, that's a very strong indicator of the of how strong an effect you have. Because the significance level will, at least it won't show you details under 0.000. But that's something you can read out of the t-value itself. So if you have a very strong thing there. There are other ways of doing this as well. You can, in addition to this, you usually say something about effect sizes, which is another way of showing how strong an effect you have. That follows this. So I think we'll in this instance end here. We will do some of these statistics in the groups as well. So this is the type of analysis we will do with the data you gather. So you'll get a bit more practice there on how to read these things. And take a look at the, for instance, there are some important things that I didn't mention here now when I did it this way. For instance, the stuff about confidence levels. Confidence levels is a way to express the uncertainty in your data, because you do a lot of estimates. You show a mean, but that usually have some kind of a normally distributed uncertainty to it. To express this uncertainty when it comes to say something about the population, not your sample but the population, you tend to express things as or express a standard or a confidence interval, which says that within you're for instance 95% sure that the actual value that we are estimating as a mean for the population lies within these boundaries. So you usually get a kind of a boundary thing, a line above the on top of a bar graph, for instance, that tells you something about the size of this uncertainty that you apply to your data. Because there are always uncertainties in this data, and that's something we usually want to express. So when we do this group-wise, we'll probably try to put some confidence intervals on the data as well. I think we finish here. There will be one more lecture. We'll see if we have this auditorium next week, then we'll probably do it next week at the same time. There will be a lecture on ethics in research, which is the final normal lecture that we will have here. Okay, so bye for today.